Commerce and Labor come to order. Let the record show that Senator Holman, Senator Ziegler are here. We have before us today SB 81, SB 85, SB 172, SB 200, and SB 282. I've had a request to bring up SB 200 first because of conflict with another meeting. Senator Eliason, did you want to address this bill?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, SB 200 came about because of a number of things that happened this past year as a result of the interpretation of this is a situation where a lot of the fishermen found themselves in. In your packet, you'll find a memorandum dated well, it's 1977. It's Alaska Tax Ruling 77-3. It relates to this particular bill. It says, the fact that a vessel rigged for fishing, freezing its catch instead of icing does not subject the vessel or its operators and owners to the statutes applicable to freezer ships, because the mere preservation of the catch until it can be processed does not constitute processing. Now, that memorandum was written in 1977 and circulated through the fleet. And now we have a memorandum of September 26, 1980, some 3 years later. So during a recent review of our outstanding revenues rulings, it was determined that ruling 77-3 is an error and should be canceled immediately. And along with that notice were a request that the freezer ships were billed for 2 years taxation, which they were so told that they were exempt from originally. I guess the whole problem we're having with the concept is that, number one, as I recall, the purpose of taxing processors on the beach versus floating processors is that those who are located in Alaska, who have plants on Alaska's shores, who employ Alaskans to process the catch, are subject to a less of a processor's tax than those who come into the state, who buy and process fish and take them out of the state. So it's sort of a balance. However, this particular group we're talking about, these offshore trawlers, most of them are stressing quality, as you're probably well aware that is the name of the fishing game now, is quality. And we're finding that out more and more each day. In order for us to be able to compete on the world markets, we're going to have to produce a good quality fish. Otherwise, you know, we can forget about it. So a number of these vessels have spent a great deal of money converting to be able to, instead of icing their catch and delivering into the processing plants in Alaska, they convert to freezer. Or they'll freeze and glaze the fish and then deliver those fish into Alaskan ports, the processors. Number one, it produces a much better quality fish. The fish are immediately preserved when they're caught. Number two, it cuts down the fuel consumption, which is beginning to be more of a problem. But I guess
another reason is that I guess what really brought it to a focus was the fact that these fishermen with good intentions had converted to freezing capabilities, had been delivering in Alaska plants processors for 2 years, and now the Department of Revenue decides what reason, I'm not sure, particular time that they are processors and subject to, rather than 3% tax, a 5% tax. And to compound the problem, it's retroactive for 2 years. So it seems to me that if the Department of the State sends you a letter saying that you are not subject to certain things and you act accordingly, you make large investments to do these, then 2 years later they come back and say, I'm sorry, it's a different ballgame, you have to pay your 2 years taxes. There's something wrong in that approach. It might be legal, but I think it's unfair. So what we're trying to do is trying to establish the game rules for what's going to happen these next fishing seasons. I think it's only fair to, not only fair to the processors, but it's, and the fishermen, but also fair to the department, that we should have some guidelines they're operating under.
I would suspect myself, Senator Elias, that we're going to see more and more of our fishing fleet probably convert to some kind of freezing or something along this line to increase the quality of our fish, and it kind of looks to me like another interpretation of just what's the intent of ex vessel price to the fishing fleet. There's one thing that you have when you're a fisherman and do some handling of that product, and another thing when you're a processor and you're receiving that product. Senator Farenkamp.
Mr. Chairman, I've got a great deal of concern about this, because, you know, at Hess, we've worked for 2 years on trying to help with quality control of the fish, and this allows fishermen to be able to stay out longer, and there are quite a few advantages to being able to freeze those fish as well as quality control. However, I feel like that this brings up just a bigger problem, and that is that we need to take a real good look at the whole bill as in view of the fisherman's tax bill, in view of rewrite. And another thing that bothers me is the effective date of this bill, which takes place immediately, but there's no mention of retroactive to the intent of legislation at the time it was passed. Was that intentional?
Well, I guess we're looking towards next season. I don't know. We're having it researched in legal affairs whether or not they can go back and say we've changed the rules, you owe us 2 years taxes or not. If they can do that legally, that's one thing, but it's unfair. I know that, and there's no question about that. But if they can go back legally and collect taxes who they said they were exempt for, if they can do that legally, maybe we should look at a retroactive clause. I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, through the chair, Dick, this is the thing that I was getting at. If we could, it's my impression that there'll be not only objections, but court cases, et cetera, concerning this. And if we can change the effective date in some manner that would eliminate this burden on the fishermen, then I think we should look at it. As well as a committee, just take a look at that whole bill.
Senator Farenkamp, I was very, very tempted to use this vehicle for some concerns I have in the interpretation of ex vessel price that's going on at this time. And it took more than a little effort on my part not to use this vehicle and let this vehicle go forward. I definitely plan on introducing something in the near future that may do the same thing, and thought that if you move this vehicle on up to finance, it's still there. And if my memory serves me correctly, Senator Elias and I serve it on finance, and it'll probably be capturing this bill as it came to finance.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's not my intention to hold up this bill, but I would like for us at this time to think about a commitment to taking a look at that, because with the innovations that are coming up as far as the handling of fish, I can see us having to go into maybe 1,000 is an exaggeration, but a great number of exemptions to the existing law. And I just feel that we should, I'd like to point out that I think we should take a look at the whole bill. And I'm not trying to hold up Senator Lassen's bill at all.
He holds some to it, sorry.
Hmm?
I say he holds them up occasionally, so it's all right if we keep it for a while.
Senator?
I might add that it affects not only my district, but Kitchigan and Juneau and the rest of Alaska. However, I think that, I know you're right, there are other problems, but right now we have requested legislative research, House research. Bernie Hogan requests them to look into just what is required in order to buy a salmon. As an example, we know that we can't buy a salmon from a fisherman and serve it in our lounge, because we're breaking about 3 different laws. You have to get a bond, as I understand it, and you have to have a file of notice of intent to do something other, and you have to have a license. And a lot of these things, which really are aimed at different people, but sort of a catch-all, they're hitting the cross-section of all of Alaska. I think that we should define who we're really trying to tax and we shouldn't, or whatever method they use to. We're not requesting that people be. We don't want to open up loopholes, but on the other hand, we certainly don't want to create a hardship upon not only the fisherman, but upon a restaurant owner or somebody who wants to buy a fish to ship south or whatever. I think we're talking about two different things. We're talking about processors, as we visualize them, those that are in primarily fish business to buy, process, and sell fish versus those who are accommodating tourists or what have you that come through Alaska. So if we're going to create burdens that people can't buy a fish from fishermen, fresh fish, and sell in a restaurant without being fined $900 because they didn't have these two or three different licenses, you know, something's out of tilt.
Thank you. Any more questions? Thank you. Thank you, Senator Lassie.
You propose to move this bill today, Mr. Chairman?
Well, we'll see what happens here. We've got Mr. Jenkins, Gary.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Gary Jenkins, Director of the Audit Division, Department of Revenue. And I believe you have a fiscal note in the memo from me regarding this bill. We clearly recognize the situation that the bill is trying to attempt and have no quarrel with whatsoever. We know that there has been significant effort on the part of many fishermen to enhance the quality of their catch, and it's understandable. I pointed out in my memorandum a potential problem that we see attempting to administer this statute from the point of view that as drafted, this would make any person who purchases the salmon subject to reporting, paying the tax on that salmon. And what happens is, I'm sure most of you realize, there are a lot of buyers that are in the industry right now that go out and buy salmon and subsequently turn around and sell them to a processor who will then pay the tax to us. But the buyer themselves, in fact, do not do any processing. And since the statute is based on the physical act of processing, there's going to be created another group of people that we're going to have to try to track down to make sure we get the tax from. And from our perspective, that's just, you know, obviously makes our job a lot more difficult. In many cases, we won't have any record of those people doing business in the state. Because for a person to operate as a buyer, they don't have to get, you know, any licenses with the state except a business license, and they can put any name on that business license they want. And unless they identify themselves as a quote-unquote fish buyer, we will have no way of knowing, you know, what business in fact they're doing in the state. You know, they can just say general sales or something of this nature. We would suggest, and I did not mention it in my memorandum, if the committee wishes to move this legislation, we would suggest potentially a fourth condition be added in section 2 of the bill, which I don't believe would be offensive to the author, and yet would make the legislation more administrable. And that would be a condition 4, which would require that the salmon were sold to a licensed processor in the state. Now, I believe in most cases, and Senator Lassen can correct me, that most of the cases, if not all the cases presently, when a fisherman is freezing his catch and delivering it on shore, he's delivering it to a processor rather than to a person that's just a quote-unquote buyer. From an administration point of view, this obviously has the distinct advantage that we're already dealing with all the processors. We know who they are, we know where they are, they're already required to file returns with us. And then this would allow us to thus keep track of this a lot better. And that's why we would make that suggestion.
I wonder then, Gary, if I had a question mark on your memo there and asked my staff if you had any proposed language, and I don't mean you personally, but they had checked with the department over there several times. They told me nothing had been forthcoming, but I wonder if you could give us that language. Do you think the language just has given there would do it, or?
I could work out some precise language. I did not. I'm not sure if a letter has reached Senator Lassen that came from the commissioner, or perhaps it hasn't caught up with him yet. Would have come over late last week, in which we suggested that again in general terms. And I think I could fairly quickly come up with something that could be added to the bill that would be clear. And if you'd like me to do that, I can, in the next few minutes, just do that, or I can get it back to the committee by tomorrow at the latest.
We would appreciate it. Any other questions, Gary? Thank you, Mr. Shane.
Yes, sir.
Yes, you betcha.
First,
So you have a difficult time enforcing the regs in the past. Of course, you've been doing it for 4 years. And I note that you signed both of these memorandums. One said you could and one said you couldn't. So just as a matter of, you know, general information, why, if in fact you want to reclassify these vessels, why didn't you say, from this point forward, you're going to be classified as processor?
Yeah.
Why did you choose a method of going back and collecting taxes for 2 prior years when these people were told that they were not subject to that tax?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I give a little history on the development of this, the situation that the Senator is describing. In 1976, the issue was brought to one of the members of my staff, who at that point wrote a memorandum to, I believe, the person inquiring, saying that he felt, recognizing the equity of the situation, that it was his position that the person catching the fish was freezing merely to maintain the quality and was subsequently selling it to a processor, that they would be exempt from tax. I'm not sure the exact scenario of why we got to the point of issuing a ruling, but basically the same staff member drafted the ruling, and unfortunately, when it came to me for signature, I didn't take the time to really look at it carefully to make sure we didn't have a conflict with the statute. Unfortunately, what happened is obviously the ruling was issued and was being relied on, but last year when we were starting to review the changes that were made to the fisheries business tax by the legislature and drafting regulations, we got back into this issue again. As I really looked at it in detail for the first time, recognized that the ruling was in error. And obviously, I'm sure you realize that we're just trying to enforce the law and we don't have the authority to change it. And the law is extremely clear on that point. It is very precise when it defines processing and saying that freezing is processing. And there is just no exception that's provided there.
Senator Zink.
What do you think about Senator Bernkamp's suggestion, Mr. Jenkins, just to do that which ought to be done, just put a retroactive date and wipe it out, that you don't have any more problems with enforcement, the fishermen aren't hurt? What's the matter with that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, the only reaction I would have is I think you have a potential constitutional issue there in that you're being making a retroactive provision for a narrow group of people who are subject to the provision, and I'm only basing this on the experience I had this last year where the legislature passed a bill that would exclude airline employees from the individual income tax.
I'm totally familiar with that.
Which you're very familiar with.
We all are.
The Attorney General's office gave us an opinion that, because of its select nature and not being a general retroactive provision, that it was unconstitutional.
Who's going to bring all these lawsuits? Proper Reverend? You won't find the Attorney General bringing suit on this. How can any fisherman be appointed by it? The only person, as far as I'm concerned, is one Mr. Jenkins, who might want to pursue this in the courts.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ziegler, obviously we are guided in our administration of the law by the direction we get from the Department of Law, and if they give us an opinion that something is unconstitutional, then we basically ignore it and enforce the law the way they tell us, and that's
Senator Farrington.
Mr. Chairman, I'm continually amazed at the way bills can be passed or actions taken, and the advice of legal at the time, operating under advice of legal, and we always check with legal. We find out that we're doing one thing that comes out to be absolutely contrary to the intent of legislation when it's over with, and then legal tells us it's unconstitutional. You know, somebody needs to make up their mind somewhere along the line and let us be able to have bills. Maybe the whole answer is just start writing our own bills, because we never come out with what we intended to write and the regs never reflect it. Well, maybe almost never.
Any other questions of Mr. Jenkins? Thank you.
Yes, sir.
We have a Lewis Schnapper.
No,
Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Louis Schnapper, the director of the Alaska Trollers Association. We represent the Freezer Boat Fleet as well as the whole Power Troll Fleet, and we support SB 200. I also want to say that I appreciate most of this panel's point of view that the whole tax structure for the fishing industry is confused and probably needs revision. But the main reason that this narrow bill is before you now is that there is a class of fishermen who have made a substantial investment and need to fish this coming season. Should this bill, or a bill very much like it, not be passed before the fishing season starts, then the 50 or 75 freezing trollers that exist now will face the choice of either icing their fish, which some of them are not capable of doing, most of them are, or of trying to get through the Department of Revenue's complicated hoops and bonding requirements before the season starts. And then, of course, if there is a revision of the whole law, then probably for next season, that will no longer be necessary. So this is admittedly a band-aid, but we think it's a good one and one that will serve our purposes. Mr. Jenkins' amendment causes us no trouble, and if that would make the bill easier for any people involved with this to deal with, then we'd support such an amendment. I think that Senator Eliason gave a real good background of what the problem is, and I think you're probably all familiar with what the freezer boats are. The one point that perhaps isn't clear is that freezer boats are from the outside no different than any other of the sort of larger and newer power trollers. It's just a simple question of what happens when the fish get below the hatch in the deck. In some cases they go on ice, and in some cases they go into a freezer compartment. And right now we've got a situation where it's actually slightly less economical to freeze fish. You have to have an extra deckhand, you have to work harder. But the quality of the product is such that the people that have made this investment in freezer boats feel that their investment is worthwhile, because before long the market will recognize the superior quality of these fish. We just got a publication from the Canadian government which goes on for a number of pages about how to handle frozen fish. And the Canadians have, probably for 5 years longer than the Americans, recognize that sea frozen salmon especially is the most desirable product to come out of this fishery. I think some of the other things that we should be talking about perhaps are the difference between using renewable resources and non-renewable resources here. This will allow the use of renewable salmon resources with the most effective use of fuel resources, the idea of not having to run into or Pelican from the fairway grounds every 10 days is very attractive these days when fuel efficiency is a very large problem. As far as the cheating, the administrative problems Mr. Jenkins referred to, basically the bill before you does nothing more than to move us back 3 months in time to the policy held by the Department of Revenue for 4 years before they discovered that their policy was in conflict with the statute on the books. So any problems which might exist should this bill be passed are exactly those problems which have existed or should have been noticed in the last 4 years. We heard no testimony to suggest that there were any problems with this, and I suggest that there'll be no perceptual changes, so that there'll be any problems in the future. And I think that pretty much covers our support of this bill.
Any questions, committee?
Mr. Chairman, just a brief comment. I'm going to have to leave in a moment, and would like to propose some language that I drafted that would perhaps meet revenue's suggestion. Just perhaps after on line 27, after number 3, put a number 4 that would just say the salmon are sold or transferred to a buyer licensed under AS, whatever the licensing statute is. And I would just suggest that perhaps that might be an appropriate response to the Department of Revenue's concern, and certainly would value Senator Ziegler's comment.
Sure, that line, Senator.
It might be one way of solving the problem, because obviously this is a bill that needs to be enacted.
I would still like to have a retroactive clause put on there, because there's an 18th principle of law which you and I and
Judge Walker know a little bit about. It goes along the lines of when somebody has sustained a wrongdoing by two as a result of the dealings between two innocent parties, the one who caused the problem is the one who should bear the loss. And clearly, revenue is the one who created this whole damn situation. They were at fault. They said this is fine and dandy. Now go ahead. Now they want to go back and say, hey, because we were wrong, you should pay. And I don't buy that. The same thing with those crews, you know, the airline crews last year. Miserable over there. Whew.
I think your suggestion is a good one through the chair.
I think what I'd like to do is I'd entertain a motion for the amendment to the bill as suggested by Senator Rohde. And then I think I would like to move the bill on up to finance, and I'll pursue this retroactively question and see if we can do something with that.
Right. I would move the amendment that I stated to the committee, Mr. Chairman.
In your objection. Entertain a motion to move the bill as amended.
Mr. Chairman, I would move we pass Senate Bill 200 from committee. I'm going to do pass recommendation.
I'm going to be a no rent until there's a retroactive clause of it.
Me too.
I'm going to do pass. We have before us now SB 81. An act increasing the number of board of directors to Alaska Housing Finance. Is there anybody here to testify on that? Chair, do I obtain a motion to move this out within their individual recommendations?
What's the number, Mr. Chair?
81. SB 81 has to do with adding one more public board member to the Alaska Housing Finance, and specifies that at least one of the public board members should be a contracted, a licensed contractor.
Well, Mr. Chairman, why? I mean, I know what the bill would do, but who needs it? What's the motivation?
It would be my feeling that it would give us a better balance of departmental heads and public heads on it, myself, Senator. Right now, the board is loaded, if you will, with the Commissioner of Revenue, Commissioner of Commerce, and one other commissioner, and at this time have two public members. This would increase the two to three.
What's that contract?
Well, it doesn't, I don't read it to add an actual contractor. No.
Sub 4 under Section 1A is a no language.
Yes. Would it in effect add
two
new members?
One member of the public and
one member. You're right.
Mr. Chairman, there's no fiscal note with this either. It's what it was
supposed to be. Yes, there should be a fiscal
note. Well, Mr. Chairman, my file reflects that the executive director of the AHFC has ambivalent feelings about this bill or the need for what the bill purports to do. And he also points out that there is a possibility that the contractor might be in a conflict of interest situation. That is to say, having a lobbyist sit on the board. Mind you, I have nothing against the bill, but why do we have to do it? Are we just doing unprovoked good to this particular board? Seems to me the sponsor, if he cared about enough, should come here and tell us why he thinks this is a wonderful idea.
I would agree with that, Senator.
Should we
go hold this?
Ask the prime sponsor to vote.
Check with Frank Foster.
Mr. Chairman, I think this is a situation we've been up before a lot of times. If there's no itch, why are we scratching that?
All right,
then hold it. It's what's been very nice.
Doing unprovoked good or?
Unprovoked good or?
Scratching even that itching. What's the other one? Solving non-problems?
Yeah, you're confronted with a real non-problem.
Senate Bill 85. We've had this bill before us.
Okay,
Did you get that paper from the
everybody should have heard about? Mr. Sherman, when you compose these calendars, do you really go through the files and draw them out at random, or do you carefully select them?
Okay. When this bill was before us, we had some people testifying, and it was considered that a possible compromise on it would be that we would eliminate the possibility of having the people under the age of 18 be able to pick an assistant. And we find that this would be unconstitutional as long as it was there was no problems. It was a peaceful walkout or peaceful strike. So I propose we just move the bill ahead as written. And I entertain a motion to do so.
Mr. Chairman, so moved. With what? Individual recommendations.
There's no testimony on this bill
today. No, we had testimony, I believe it was about a month ago, Senator Perry Camp.
6 weeks at least.
Yeah. I remember that.
And, we have been continually receiving phone calls from Anchorage to discuss some action on the bill from the youngsters involved in it. Is there anybody here to testify on 172 today? My understanding was that Joe Bush was going to testify and that he's sick and wasn't able to make the trip, so I think we'll hold this one. SB 282. This is a result of, I think, SB 19 when we had that before us, and that we assured Mr. Coffin that we would look into the matter and handle it as a separate issue. Fred, did you want to have, did you have anything to say on this?
First of all, I'd like to thank you for what they have done in addressing this separate issue. I sent up last week for inclusion in the packet that looks like this, has a lot of numbers on it. The purpose of that was to support the fact that even though SB 19 allowed the rate to float, that the 5% differential still puts us in a position where we lose money. And an 8% differential will allow us, in most cases, to at least break even. There are instances where we might still lose a half a percent based on these examples here. But they're very minimal, and we feel we can live with that as an industry. One other point that I would like to make, and that is if you look at the situation that was in effect on March 12th, where the federal discount rate was 13%, and the base rate, because the Fed rate had not changed for some time, the base on which the Alaska usury was established was also 13%. If you add the 5% that's currently in effect, that gives us a limit of 18%, and once that changed to 8%, then that would give us a 21% limit. And I had a couple of phone calls this morning questioning that, and I wanted to make it clear that the fact that we may have the legal ability to charge 18% or to charge for what amounts to 21%, that we do not do that. Our interest, our policy on interest is set, and somewhat dictated, of course, by competition in the industry. And so we would not be charging 21% just because that was our legal limit, but the 8% would allow us protection in the cases where we needed it. And hopefully to make that clear, the rate that we were charging at on March 12th, so this is the way the policy of our company is, on amounts of money of $10,000 and less, we were charging 18.5%. At a point in time when our cost of money was 16.5%. If you change it to 8%, legally we could charge 21, but we would not do that because our policy says on the smallest debit balances that we have, we charge 2% above our cost of money. If the debit balance that a client carries with us is between $10,000 and $30,000, the rate is 18.25%. It comes down a quarter of a percent. We're really talking about a 20-50% rate. 30,000 to 50,000, our rate is 17.75%. 50,000 to 100,000, 17.25%. And 100,000 and up is 17. At this point, we're charging 1.5% above our cost of money. This is the policy. On the smallest or on our large debit balances, we charge 1.5% above our cost of money. On the smallest debit balances, we charge no more than 2% above our cost of money. Average out about 1% above our cost of money, which compensates us for making a loan and administering the loan.
Any questions from committee members? Senator Penn.
Mr. Chairman, I'm doing some research on this bill. We were trying to get an explanation, if you will, or a definition of this marginal account customer. Mm-hmm. And in talking with some of the bankers, it seemed that they couldn't give us an explanation of this without 2.5 pages discourse on what it really was and the various steps that were involved. And the suggestion was made, and I'd like to ask your opinion on it, that the marginal account customer reference, and there is no definition that be deleted from the bill and be replaced with the phrase, the customer whose account has been extended to purchase security. Does that make any sense to you?
Yes, it's really the same thing. I can understand margin account is a term which is, of course, very well known in the investment field. Banker might not be familiar with it because he doesn't deal with it.
Okay.
It really would say the same thing as far as working.
That's great, but when I call the division of banking, they can't give me the definition of what it is.
What did you call me?
Another, Mr. Chairman, through the chair, the upper limit to this, the range is separate register, right? But on the lower limit, then, is there still not possibility the way it's worded for a beat on that area? You can say, well, 1.5% or 2% or 1%. Will competition step take care of that?
It has in the past the money legitimate lenders, is my opinion. And I can only phrase it that way. The legitimate lenders, of course, are the ones who...
Well, then are we opening a Pandora's, Mr. Chairman, through the chair, are we opening a Pandora's box for this? Those who are not legitimate lenders?
Quite possibly. My response would be that an illegitimate lender, if you will, is not going to care about the law in any case. So,
I think I might address some of the people.
Mr. Chairman, are you? I have a comment on your approval.
I guess that we refer into this as we refer to this law, right, to the statute under which the security people register in the state of Alaska. So, this applies just to those people who are dealing with security and are registered in Alaska. So it applies only to them.
Fred, what might happen, what might very well happen is undoubtedly if the bill hits the floor of the Senate, then the MLCD will be charged for primarily responsible with the duty of caring that okay. And I anticipate he's going to get in trouble. He said, why are we doing such a big favor to broker dealers by giving them 8 percentage points above the on the way to service? If I just understood what I thought you said,
He said, like, no matter what the rate is, we won't charge more than 2% of what it costs us to borrow money. Is there another way of saying that instead of saying that? Here, in other words, we have to show your good faith to get anybody to buy this property. I'm not fucking with that, you know, but I'm just saying that there's another way to say that no broker-dealer can charge more than 2 points above whatever the annual interest number. Or their cost of money, I mean. The cost of borrowing money, yeah.
Okay. Pardon me, I'm not familiar with all the answers to the question.
I had his lead to talk to you.
A question was asked to me on the phone this morning was, could we tie this to something other than the Federal Reserve discount? And my response was, yes, you can tie it to the prime rate or to the call rate for broker dealers, which is actually our cost of money. Broker dealers borrow on what they call their broker call rate. And obviously, if you set legislation in effect that allows us to charge more than 2% above our cost of money, i.e., the broker call rate, that would be ideal. My response was that would be ideal, however, that federal discount rate is going to have a traditional thing to hang on. And I was under the impression that the people involved with Boston on this wanted to do it.
Well, this was a suggestion as it came when we were dealing with SB-19. I was just wondering about the, that's an easy one to enforce when we talk about setting this out. And I wonder, from an enforcement point of view, how you would enforce the call rate with the different people that are dealing with security.
Mr. Chairman, the thought comes to me that this would support the point, and that is that an investment firm we borrow from a major bank on the East Coast, and that becomes the broker call rate or our cost of money. But I can envision situations where other brokers might borrow in other places, and rates could be different by, I would imagine, small percentages. They could be different. Not necessarily all brokers borrow from the same bank and therefore the same rate all the time.
Do you have any suggestions along that line? It's my understanding that the reason that the Federal Reserve rate is easier is because it's very definite, known number, if you will. Any other questions? Thank you. I'm sorry to entertain a motion to move this out in individual recommendations.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Senate Bill 382 to pass in committee with the individual recommendations.
Next time we take up one of your bills, try to.